You know, it forced me to get very real and shift from delusion into reality, and the fact that my life, you know, if I was going to be pretty tough. On some level, there was definitely a sense that there was more for me. It wasn't supposed to be benefits and survival and mediocre, you know, mediocrity. There was something there. There was a light that was somehow... I think sometimes when you are so low or you find yourself in such a difficult place, it can actually be the spark that wakes you up and drives you into action. And I think that's what happened.
I've got your book here, Purpose. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Mm. I'd like to read, paraphrase a little excerpt from it to start things off. I read this and it really resonated with me. Here it is. I'm going to paraphrase it slightly. So, rather than confront the cold, harsh reality that we are the ones holding back from achieving our own happiness, we create magnificent stories to deflect and distract us from the truth. Anything to justify the fact that we're not prepared to do what's necessary. And then, if I skip forward a little bit, mm-hmm. it's always fear that stops us from doing what's required. Mm-hmm. Now, that line, when I read that, you know, I don't know if you've ever read something or come across something or heard something and you thought, what is this person? Are they talking about me? Because I really felt that when I read that. Now, before we start recording, remember now I told you a little bit of a story about 1,000 Voices, mm-hmm. how I had the idea in 2017. It mm-hmm. didn't start till 2022. And what prompted me into starting was that I learned that what was making me stop that, I was creating magnificent stories and all that, but I learned essentially it was a fear of failure. Mm. And I don't know what it was, but I felt like that realization was powerful. And then that kickstarted me into action, and 2 years later, we're here now.
Amazing.
For you, where does fear come from? We live in the world of people people are scared, you know, you may be scared to follow their dreams, they're working and doing things that they don't like, but they're fearful. Mm-hmm. It's easier to follow suit, conform and follow the status quo as opposed to really stepping out and doing something else. But it's scary. Mm. It can be scary. Where does that fear come from?
I mean, I don't have a sort of definitive answer, but I guess I can only, if I speak from my own experience, I think that there is a freedom that comes with childhood. You know, there's a sort of liberation from the opinions of others, you know, from external validation, from the prospect of rejection, from the definition of ourself based on outcome. All of that we're free from when we're a little bit, you know, we just are. And I think as we get older, we start to take on all of those things, and we start to become often overly preoccupied with how we are being perceived, even more so than whether or not we are being true to the expression of who we are and of our, you know, most authentic self. And I think it's that. I think that there is a sort of I think innately we all want to belong. We're afraid to be rejected. And for many of us, that can really show up as not taking, not saying yes to the ideas that come to us. And I've said before, I think ideas are gifts and they come to us for a reason to be actualized. And for many of us, just the prospect of not knowing how things are going to unfold is enough for us to never actually take that first step. So, yeah, credit to you that we're sitting here today. It's amazing.
What's your relationship with fear now?
It is accepting, increasingly accepting, in that I know the fear is always going to be there. And so I'm learning that the more that I kind of am able to acknowledge it and, oh, hello, nice to see you again. Come have a seat at my table and take action anyway, rather than there's a real power in just acknowledging that it's there, like to actually be able to sort of shine a torch, just like putting a torch under your bed and going, okay, I see you. And just in the identification of it, its grip, its power on me lessens. And so I'm able to take action anyway. And, you know, you also start to have reference points for the fact that fear can, I think there's two different kinds of fear. You know, the one is, and the one that we're talking about here is where you're actually in sacred territory. You're actually, it's like a space which holds a promise of you inhabiting a greater version of yourself. And I think when you have been afraid and taken action, you start to build up these reference points throughout your life, so that when that fear, that familiar feeling comes up again, it's like, oh, here we go again. You know, we're about to grow, we're about to get bigger. And it never goes away, I don't think.
So it's like there's another line in the book, and again, I'm going to paraphrase. Like, I can't remember the exact wording, but it being more easier to play small. Mm. And that reminds me of that famous Coach Carter mm-hmm. scene where he quotes the Marianne Williamson poem mm-hmm. or quote or whatnot. Like, mm-hmm. it's our not our, what is it? It's our deepest fears. It's not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fears that we're powerful more beyond measure. It's et cetera, et cetera. Basically, it's easier for us to play small so that it's easier. It's not a scary space. You know, mm-hmm. you're comfortable. You're growing, I suppose. I'd like to understand, your book is called Purpose.
Yeah.
Purpose is a big theme in your book, in your life, in your journey so far. Mm. And you working through life and walking into your purpose or discovering that over time through a period of different experiences and things you've gone through. How does the fear and acknowledging the fear, but I suppose doing anyways and working through that, I'm wondering how the purpose interacts with that fear. Is it because you're walking in your purpose that you're able to do that now?
I think, for me, purpose is not something that we do. It's not a thing that we're here to do. It's a state of being. Like, I think that this idea that there's this thing that we're here to do, that's our purpose, is more of this outdated paradigm that says our worth is determined by our output. And, you know, it's just not true. We are innately worthy even before we do a thing. And I think for me, purpose is about becoming the truest expression of who we are, and letting go of who we're not. So all of the, you know, the stories and the need to fit, all of the belief systems that we've inherited, all of the stuff that isn't us, the more that we remove that, we come back to our authentic self. And from that space of alignment with our truth, we start to connect to inspiration, ideas, and things to do. So the doing part, the projects, the 1,000 voices, the colorblind cards, the book, they are just an expression of our purpose. You know, it's not about the thing. You'll be inspired to do many things throughout your life, but your purpose is just to keep being more and more Tevin. And the more that you do, you cannot help but feel called to create. I don't know if that answered the question, but...
it answered, and it's got my head. When you said that last part, my purpose... Or for anyone else, listen, your purpose is to be more and more you. It's not what you do. It's becoming yourself. Mm. Can you expand upon that? What does that mean? What does that look like?
It looks like being willing to really look in the mirror and, you know, first of all, ask, like, do you really want to see? And then it's this process of, which for me looks like, journaling, you know, and I started to write during the period I was caring for my dad at the end of his life, as I shared in the book. And then I never really stopped once I picked up that pen. You know, this was what, seven years on now. But it's like I meet myself on the page and, you know, we're going through life and we're doing, and there's this haze of activity and we're constantly thinking about the next thing. And we're very rarely present. And it's in those moments of presence that we kind of catch up with ourselves and we get to explore whether or not, or ask the question, is the life that I'm living actually in alignment with who I am and what I want? Or am I just on some kind of reactive treadmill, hamster wheel? Perhaps it's not even our aspiration. Maybe it's our parent who said, you know, you need to be a doctor, a lawyer, or a teacher, you know. And so we found ourselves going to a particular university or a, you know, whatever it might be. So to become our most authentic self is to ask those questions and kind of interrogate how much of this is actually me and how much have I just, you know, how much of it is just masks that I've put on throughout my life, and to start to take them off.
No, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. I'd like to understand 15-year-old Jessica. At 15 years old, you've spoke about it quite a bit in others, in your book and et cetera, throughout your life, how you got expelled from school with 4 GCSEs. What was going on then? Who was Jessica then?
Oh, a little Jess. She was, you know, I think like any teenager, trying to work out who she was, definitely trying to fit at that point, you know, with peers and sort of school friends and things. And having a tough time, you know, family life was pretty dysfunctional. There was lots of love there, but it was often kind of masked by dysfunction. And, you know, I grew up with parents who are that generation, they didn't have the luxury of space to ponder on their purpose. You know, they're just working 7 days a week to provide and had their own, you know, unhealed trauma. And so, yeah, I was impacted a lot by kind of home life and I guess my own internal working out, but becoming a woman slowly, and became disconnected to my purpose, you know, to who I was. And I think that's where we become vulnerable, you know, when we don't know who we are. And it's hard when you're in your teens and you add in a layer of not having those kind of that sort of strong, stable foundation, and it's tricky. So yeah, you know, I was a sort of, it was just impacted by my circumstances, and I wasn't a naughty kid. I don't think there are naughty kids. I think, so I kind of fell out of the system that way. But I look back and I, you know, I have huge gratitude for every moment of my life and all of that challenge, because it's absolutely played into, you know, who I am today.
When you talk about that, one line you certainly spoke about, parents not having the space to even think about purpose. It's true. It's just work, work, work. Like, just got to put food in the plate. And then it's like, what we need to eat right now. We haven't got time to sit down and work out what our dreams and aspirations are. And hearing you talk about your younger self, it sounds very reflective in a sense that you've gone through a journey and you're where you are now. Still on the journey. I don't believe journeys never end, really. You're still on your journey. You're here, where you are now. You're looking back and saying, this is who I was there and then. When you were 15, at that point in time, like your parents who didn't have the luxury to sit down and think about their purpose, were you aware of any, like, what, were you like, okay, I'm like this, I'm like that, or were you literally just going through the emotion aspect, being reactive?
Yeah, totally. Just going through the motions. And I think one of the things that I had a very strong sense of was the need, was this heavy responsibility, was a heavy sense of, yeah, responsibility on my shoulders. I think I felt like I needed to make my life happen. It felt like, there was a lot of fear, actually. There was a lot of fear about, yeah, what my life was going to be. There was a lot of fear and a lot of uncertainty and Yeah, a disconnection from any kind of vision at that point around what life might hold for me.
What were the circumstances that led to the expulsion?
I stole some trainers. I was on work experience and it was like, take your child to work day. And for whatever reason, I couldn't go to work with my mum or dad. And so I ended up going to this department store and I just like started seeing this boy, like my first boyfriend. And so for some reason, I thought it would be smart to steal a pair of trainers and give for him. And I was caught. There you go.
Well, I hope he appreciated it at least. What do you feel that, whether it's the school system, society, people around you or whatever, could have done more to intervene to stop that from happening, for you to go down that period?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I look back, it's funny because for many years I had so much shame around that story. I wouldn't tell people, you know, which is, you know, it still kind of blows my mind now that, yeah, there was still on some level a self-blame. And now I look back and I see this vulnerable girl, you know, who really needed the support of the system in which she was held, the school system. And, you know, it wasn't just that experience, you know, with the theft, but it was, you know, I was unhappy at school, you know, often in tears. So there was a whole backdrop. And I was clearly a vulnerable kid who really needed someone to sort of go, like, what's going on with Jessica? Because this is out of character. And instead, I remember that the headmistress gave me a card on leaving, which said, you know, we have to make an example of you. I don't want to do this, which, you know, to sort of think about those words now and just go, how, well, it's just not what, you know, the institution of teaching should be about. Like, we need to care as a society. We need to care for our most vulnerable. And yeah, so, yeah.
Not long after that, you became a young mother. So you came pregnant at 17 and a mother at 18. Mm-hmm. In what way did motherhood shift you fundamentally?
Oh my God. I mean, it turns your world upside down, even if you're 30, right? So at 17, it was a momentous shift. And I guess particularly in that it catalyzed me into action. You know, it forced me to get very real and shift from delusion into reality, and the fact that my life, you know, if I was going to be pretty tough and not what, on some level, there was definitely a sense that there was more for me. It wasn't supposed to be benefits and survival and mediocre, you know, mediocrity. There was something there. There was a light that was somehow, I think sometimes when you are so low or you find yourself in such a difficult place, it can actually be the spark that wakes you up and drives you into action. And yeah, I think that's what happened.
So you think that was the first major event that set you on this path of really coming into yourself and discovering your purpose? And
100%. But there was somebody, you know, it's a power in being seen. And there was this health visitor that came along and, you know, I was very, very depressed. And she said, "Well, why don't you go back to school?" And that was a real game-changing moment because nobody had suggested that was a possibility. And I certainly hadn't been able to see that for myself, that I could go back into academia and start to, you know, take steps towards creating prospects for myself. And it was almost like she gave me permission. She saw something inside of me that I hadn't seen yet, and that gave me permission to work toward it. So that was a really, really big moment. And then there were many people that supported me along the journey. Once I began to take action, it's like life will always meet you halfway, but you've got to take the step first. And it did take a lot of courage to take that step from, you know, as a young mum.
There's definitely power in being seen. The amount of times I've heard someone say, or just one teacher at school, one teacher that believed in them, really saw them, and that was all it took. 100%, there's a lot of power in that. You worked, you went to school, you worked, you miraculously got into the world of PR and all of that. And then you gone and worked on your first, correct me if I'm wrong, but your first purpose-driven business, which was Colorblind Cards. Can you talk about that? That was over a decade ago now.
Yeah.
Well before.
Almost two.
So quite a while ago. Well before DE&I was a thing. Can you talk about that experience as well, what that was like for you, stepping into your purpose and working on that Colorblind cards business?
Yeah, Colorblind was, it's funny because at the time I didn't see it as purpose-driven. I was just being, you know, looking for a card for my daughter. I couldn't find anything. And so decided that I would create it. And it took me on a really wonderful journey of entrepreneurship. And I had no idea how to run a business and I made lots of mistakes. But it was my first experience of really creating something that was really driven by meaning and of the power of the momentum that surrounds something which is, you know, heart led and is driven by love, which it was. You know, I really felt like there was no rage, there was no anger. It was about, I want my daughter to be able to see reflections of herself, representations of herself. And if I'm feeling that, then other mums are going to be feeling that. And I'm going to create it. So it was all like, let's do this. You know, it was really kind of, and people connected with it. And I'm very proud to have been part of a conversation that early on, like you say, around the importance of representation. And we became the first independent black card brand, multicultural card brand to be stocked in the British High Street. It was a ride.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Your father, you talk about him very fondly, and you've said that in your book that you had a powerful realization when you began to look at him as a man, not your dad. And that was powerful for you. Can you talk about that? About that realization?
Yeah, I mean, there's that space between life and death, you know, where somebody's terminally ill, as my dad was. It's like it's an interesting space because you're grieving before they've actually left, physically left, and because you know that time is coming. And my dad had always been this like incredibly proud, strong, you know, man that had come over in the Windrush and, you know, experienced some really, 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 really hard experiences here, and in his life, and had been on his own kind of spiritual journey, even though I never heard him refer to it as that. And I'd never seen him afraid. And I sort of watched him become afraid toward the end, you know, of dying. And I think grief impacts people differently. Some people find it very hard to be with that. It's so intimate, you know, to be with somebody in that space. But I think the relationship that I had with my dad, I lent into it, and I'm really glad that I was able to. And from that space of like connection, it's a deeper level of connection than we have on a day to day, where it's almost like you're playing a role. He's the father, you're the daughter, and you have these dynamics that you're used to playing out. And suddenly you take away your weekly routine and your normal, like we go over Friday night and we eat together. So you take away all of that and you're at the end of life as you've known it for, you know, at that point, 36 years or whatever it was. And the roles fall away. The roles fell away. And it was just two beings, two souls, you know, in conversation. It wasn't dad and daughter. And it was a very, very beautiful, very, very painful, very beautiful time.
At the start, you spoke about purpose not necessarily being something that you do, but more about you becoming who you are, stepping into yourself. Mm. With that experience with your father, how did that affect your sense of purpose?
I think that's really where the journey began, because I think something that stops us from asking the questions that, from really looking in the mirror, is that we don't, want to feel, so many of us are, in my experience, I had been working and doing, and all of that doing and constant activity had really stopped me from feeling, you know. There was never a moment to feel and really be with myself and check in with, you know, what was going on underneath the surface. And I was fully identified with what I did for a living and, you know, the titles on my business card and 30 under 30 awards and all of the gloss. And again, I think birth and death will bring you into reality like nothing else. And your 30 under 30 awards don't matter in the face of death. And so I think the grief really kind of broke me open in the best way and started to peel away and just remove some of these identities. And it opened my heart so that I started to feel. I couldn't help but feel. I mean, you know, my dad was my person, so I couldn't help but feel. And from that openness, I began to ask other questions.
What would you say to somebody else who's wanting to step into their purpose? They may not feel they know what it is, if there is a what. They may not understand themselves properly even. What are the first steps they can take to start to step into their purpose?
I think it is to decide. It's to decide, and it's a journey. I mean, everybody's in different places, but I think if you want to know what your purpose is, then you really want to know who you are. That is the question. Who am I beyond the job that I do, beyond my father and mother's child? Like, who am I? What are my values? What do I stand for? Who do I want to be for the world? And to start to explore those questions, and that requires space, and that, you know, doesn't have to be a week, you know, hiking in the mountains. That can be you on an evening basis with your journal and your pen before you go to bed, just starting to really get to know yourself, and to start to, and soon enough you start to see perhaps where the incongruence is. Perhaps there's the job that you're doing, but you're not happy there. You feel conflicted. It doesn't really align with your values, but you're not doing anything about it. Why? You know, why? Maybe there's the relationship that you're in that, you know, or there's the friends that you move, the circle you move in, you know, they're not really good for you, but, you know, you've known them a long time. But we need to be present in order to have those conversations with ourselves, and then we get to decide. We can continue the way we're going, and, you know, that's a choice too. Or there's another way to live, which is one where we really get that we're responsible for what we create in our life, and sometimes that requires courage to make choices which are uncomfortable.
At the start, you spoke about who 15-year-old Jess was. Who are you now? Who's Jess now?
Learning all the time, evolving all the time. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how else to answer that. Just somebody who, you know, my growth and my connection to like that which is bigger than me is the most important thing in my life. And I'm very clear on that now. And as a result, I find I am just, you know, always improving in the different roles that I play. So I keep that as central.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. And finally, what is one message that you want people to take away from your journey, from all the work you do, for your book, for everything you stand for? What's that? What's one message that you want people to take away?
I think that becoming who we are is the greatest adventure that we can ever choose to embark on in our lifetime. And it's a completely different way to exist.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the questions.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming down. No, thank you. I really appreciate it. It's been amazing. And I've learned just a lot of stuff. It's very reflective. The conversation, there's a lot of stuff I'm going to have to like listen back and reflect on some of the stuff that you spoke about, particularly around purpose. So thank you so much for coming down once again. This is 1000 Voices. We have Jessica here on the podcast. If you haven't read her book, go and check it out. Purpose. It's all over Amazon. It's all over the place. I'll put a link in the description as well. But that's that. So thank you for tuning in, people. Thank you for coming down again, Jessica. And for now, people, we're out. If you would like to understand how you can use your voice to drive change, how you can craft compelling stories to move audiences, and for additional wisdom from the guests that we have on the podcast, sign up to our newsletter. Every single week, we send actionable pieces of advice to change makers like you. So if you haven't already, the sign up link for the newsletter will be in the description of this episode.